Hi, I'm Philip Anthony Albertelli, and this is The Week in Doubt, episode 66. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/theweekindoubt. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And I'd just like to give you a warning that here in New England, it is raining right now, so you may hear some atmospheric noise, so just consider it ambiance, I guess. All right. So there's a correction I'd like to make. It's been a while since I've done one of those. In last week's episode, I was discussing a news story regarding some misogynistic comments made by an all-male Fox News panel. One of the panelists had made a comment about males being dominant in nature, so I went on to give some examples of female dominance or gender bending in the animal kingdom. Looks like I'm guilty of some bad editing. I had done this whole spiel about matriarchal insect societies, but most of it got cut off, and the way it was edited, it made it sound like I was implying that I thought seahorses were insects. Obviously, I know they're not. They're fish, really weird-looking fish, but fish nonetheless. I know that probably didn't merit a correction, but hey, as you probably know by now, I can be a little neurotic about the small things. My examples of female dominance had included the matriarchal society of the bonobos, a smaller, more peaceful cousin of the chimpanzee, but I recently found some commentary in Yahoo Questions that I really like, so I'll read that. Baboons have a female-dominated society. Elephants have a female matriarch. Hyenas do as well. The praying mantis female eats the male mantis after sex, which, the person says, I suppose is also domination. It's also speculated female theropod dinosaurs would be dominant over males, as their skeletons are consistently larger than males. So I forget the, I was negligent and just didn't write down the handle of the person who left that reply to someone's question regarding female dominance or cases of female dominance in the animal kingdom, but I like what they had to say. So I guess we can add those to the list as well. I hope it didn't sound like I was male bashing. After all, I'm a male. I just wanted to do my part to combat misogyny, I guess. All right. So let's see what else is new. Well, I started listening to Beck again, and to put that into context, a while ago I did an episode where I discussed a cringe-inducing moment during a panel discussion on a Scandinavian TV show where Richard Dawkins pretty much looked Brandon Flowers from The Killers square in the eye and told him his religion is made up and that Joseph Smith was a con man. Sentiments I share, but still I felt kind of bad for Brandon Flowers. Anyway, I had expressed my surprise at finding out that Flowers, the Killers' lead singer, was a devout Mormon. I had ended by half-jokingly saying that I would continue listening to the Killers, but that I still hadn't listened to Beck since finding out he was a Scientologist. I know it probably seems petty to stop listening to someone's music just because of their religious beliefs. I guess for me, there's just something kind of jarring or off-putting about the idea that this creative mind that you admire, responsible for all this great music or art, could also be a mind that believes in Lord Xenu or in the story of Joseph Smith and the Golden Plates. It can be a bit of a letdown, or it can be hard to wrap your mind around how an otherwise intelligent, creative person could believe in what we as non-believers would deem to be man-made superstitions or myths. Anyway, I'm back to listening to Beck and the Killers and the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. I'll let you decide if that was a joke or not. If you're a longtime listener of the show, then you're probably aware of my love of Christmas music. Actually, a lot of my favorite music is religious in nature, traditional Christmas music, the chant and polyphony of the Middle Ages, etc. I suppose it is somewhat petty to stop enjoying something simply because the creator, a person responsible for it, harbors religious beliefs or beliefs that we might not necessarily agree with. Better, I suppose, to try to find common ground and embrace a spirit of acceptance, I guess. Anyway, let's see what's going on in the news. I found an interesting article in HuffPost Religion by a minister by the name of Mark Sandlin, and it's entitled Superman versus Jesus. That sounds pretty epic. It's kind of like, was it Jesus versus Santa Claus? That short movie that got South Park started back in the day. Okay, anyway, I'll read a few paragraphs from that. And it's just about whether or not there's a deliberate messianic connection being drawn between, or a parallel being drawn in the new Man of Steel movie between Jesus and Superman. So here I go. Superman is Jesus. More precisely, in the new movie Superman, Man of Steel, we are meant to draw very distinct parallels between Superman and Jesus. Arguably, the movie goes a step further, making Superman the modern-day Americanized Jesus. And here, in between paragraphs, the writer offers a disclaimer that there may be spoilers. So I'll kind of echo that. And I'll continue now. There should be little doubt that serious efforts were made to make connections between Superman and Jesus. In one scene, what is essentially a spirit form of Superman's father, Jor-El, stands with his son looking over the earth and tells him, "You can save her, son. You can save them all." Then Superman steps out into space, arms outstretched, his body in the perfect shape of a cross, and he does not rush off to save Lois Lane and the rest of us until the camera captures a full shot of that image. He is our savior. Not just any savior, he is a savior that is both of the world and not of this world. As his father Jor-El tells him, you can embody the best of both worlds. If Superman didn't have a messiah complex before, surely having his dead father tell him that pushed him over the edge. The desire to tie Superman to Jesus seems to run deep. I've even been invited to special clergy pre-screenings of the movie and have received emails sponsored by the movie with tips and notes on how to preach on Superman on Father's Day. The effort to tie the movie to Christianity is not what I would call subtle. So the impression I get from the article is, although the minister is a self-described geek, as a minister, he's wary of drawing parallels between Jesus and Superman. As a non-believer, someone who loves mythology and good storytelling, I don't really necessarily have a strong opinion either way. I don't necessarily think that it'd be intrinsically good or bad to have a kind of messianic message embedded in a superhero film or a piece of fiction, as long as it wasn't using that message to try to lead people astray or instruct people down a dangerous path or something. And one of the readers on HuffPost actually made a really intelligent and thoughtful point, and I actually wanted to reply to them, but for some reason on HuffPost Mobile, you can no longer sign in using your Facebook account. I don't know why. But anyway, the gist of the person's comment is that there's certain motifs that are common in hero stories, and seeing similarities throughout the stories of different heroes or mythological figures isn't anything new. And they gave examples of heroes from ancient Greek mythology, like Perseus or Hercules, heroes who might be demigods, half god, half mortal, kind of in the world, but not completely of it. Kind of straddling two worlds, the world, the mortal world, and the world of the divine. Kind of the same way the minister described Superman and Jesus, in a way. That was one of the parallels he drew. And I won't open up the whole can of worms, which I've covered in another episode, about the mythicists again, and how there's some scholars who try to say that those ancient myths about demigods may have influenced the creation of a quote-unquote mythical Jesus. but also reminds me of the work of Joseph Campbell. I've mentioned Joseph Campbell a few times on the show. One of my favorite books of all time is his book, The Hero with a Thousand Faces. And he was a big influence on George Lucas. And Joseph Campbell used to talk about the hero's journey and how there were certain motifs and themes that you could find universally in different hero stories. And I think you can see those in a lot of the ancient mythological hero stories, and also in our modern hero stories with our comic book characters, etc., including Superman. In often cases, the hero is, they're at least half mortal, they're in the mortal world, they struggle like mortals struggle, they have an arduous journey that they have to embark on, and they usually learn some painful lessons along the way, and it's kind of a path of self-discovery. And often they are in the world, but not completely of the world. So I don't know if Christopher Nolan and the makers of this movie were trying to portray some kind of specifically Christian allegory or not. But I'm sure there are elements of that kind of universal hero's journey that you can find in the Superman story. And if I remember correctly, the two creators of Superman were both Jewish. So I doubt the original creators were trying to draw any intentional parallels between Jesus and Superman. You never know, but seeing as they weren't Christian, it's somewhat doubtful. But like I said, either way, I don't think it's necessarily a good or a bad thing if one wants to compare Superman to Jesus or embed some kind of messianic themes in the story. I'm not one of those militant atheists that is going to raise a hue and cry every time there's elements of religion or spirituality in secular culture. Even though I'm not a believer, you know, I strongly doubt the existence of a personal God or a creator God. I strongly doubt the existence of an afterlife. That's just where my reason leads me, but I still really enjoy symbolism and myth. So I'm not bothered by the fact that there might be religious elements in a superhero movie. And I think that if you're a Christian, I don't think there's anything to really fear from something like that. If anything, I take it as a compliment that maybe Christianity is still leaving its mark on the culture. And that Superman being such a positive character, you know, thusly drawing a parallel between Superman and Jesus, is saying something positive about Jesus as well. So I would imagine that all those Christians who like to complain in the rise of secularism and kind of Christian or religion bashing, that you could look at this as a positive thing. There's worse role models than Superman, I suppose. So like I said, I don't have any really strong feelings about that story. I just found it interesting, and I'm always fascinated by mythology and symbolism and things like that, so I just figured I'd discuss it. And while we're on the subject of fantasy, I'll jump right to another story. This is also from the HuffPost, and it looks like Pat Robertson is up to his antics again, and here we're going from Superman to Dungeons & Dragons, but somehow he links Dungeons & Dragons to a teen's suicide. And this whole thing to me sounds so bizarre. You know, I'm in my late 30s, and I can remember when I was a kid, Dungeons & Dragons was really getting popular, and there was almost this hysteria among parents and in the media. Religious people were trying to make parents and society as a whole be wary of Dungeons and Dragons and view it as this gateway to demonic forces. in that it was something dangerous to dabble with, similar to Ouija boards and tarot cards and things like that. And it was a pretty big deal back in the day. And it's really funny. I forget the name of the movie. It might have been Mazes or Monsters or something. But way before it became famous, it may even have been before Bosom Buddies or after, I'm not sure. But a really young Tom Hanks played a high school or college student who was completely engrossed by this Dungeons and Dragons type game, and he loses his hold on reality, and he ends up killing someone. I think he sees someone as some type of reptilian monster, looked like a slea stack or something, and stabs them. I forget exactly, but it's pretty trippy now when you think about how big Tom Hanks is and that he was in like this weird TV movie like that back in the day. But anyway, I'll play the Pat Robertson clip.
Televangelist Pat Robertson's made another statement that's left everyone scratching their heads. And this time it's about teen suicide.
Ladies and gentlemen, our children are at risk. They're bulimic. There's anorexia. There's all kinds of demonic games they played. It used to be Dungeons and Dragons. They got some new ones now. But the pressure on them is just incredible.
Sabrina, I'm really not sure what to say about the demonic games like Dungeons and Dragons. Do people really still listen to Pat Robertson anymore?
Well, actually, I have to admit, I think the title of the article might have been a little misleading. In fairness to Pat Robertson, it doesn't necessarily sound like he's blaming Dungeons and Dragons specifically for the suicide of this teenage girl. But he's just kind of in passing mentioning things like Dungeons and Dragons as a possible cause of teen suicide, which is still way off the mark. It's kind of crazy. But I thought he was on to something, partially, when he mentioned anorexia and bulimia, which are, you know, mental disorders which have to do with self-image to some degree. And instead of trying to come up with these weird superstitious explanations for why young people might kill themselves, I think it doesn't take a rocket scientist. I think a lot of it probably has to do with self-image, emotional issues that go unresolved for a prolonged period, and probably just feelings of being misunderstood or feeling ostracized. So I think, I mean, I shouldn't even have to say that obviously teen suicide doesn't have anything to do with role-playing games or anything like that. And there's usually emotional and psychological causes or, you know, environmental causes and sometimes it's a cocktail. If a kid's coming from a troubled environment, maybe they have a bad home life. And on top of that, maybe they have a poor self-image, or maybe they feel misunderstood or hopeless or something like that. I remember back in the day, I don't know if they were real or not, they used to be apocryphal stories about like someone's character would die in Dungeons and Dragons, so the person would hang themselves or something like that. Or there is a real story. I'm trying to think of the young guy's name. Was it Rod Ferrell or something like that? But there was this group of kind of misfit kids. I think it was down south somewhere. They used to play that game, Vampire the Masquerade. And they got really into it to the point where this kid, Rod Ferrell? I don't know. This kind of male skanky kid kind of built this little cult of personality for himself where he convinced himself and his teenage followers that he was an actual vampire. And it culminated in the murder, I believe, of his girlfriend's parents. So there's a case where groupthink, I think, led to murder, and a role-playing game may have acted as a kind of accelerant to a degree, but I don't think you don't really hear much about role-playing games and suicide. And as someone who, when I was back in high school, and this is funny, I remember, this is kind of a continuation of my weird stories from my past episode, and it seemed like that episode was pretty popular because it got like double the normal hits I get per episode. So maybe that's all I have to do to get more listeners, is just keep embarrassing myself with personal stories from my past. But I was kind of a weird kid. I know that's probably hard to imagine. I was probably, even at a young age, probably as philosophical probably as I am now. I just wasn't as knowledgeable on subjects that I now have a passion for, like his ancient history and mythology and world religion and stuff like that. I knew a little bit about those things, but I hadn't accumulated the knowledge base that I like to think I have now. But I was kind of a weird kid. I was kind of introspective, kind of daydreamy, and kind of did things my own way. And I had friends from all different cliques. And even though I totally sucked at sports, I had friends from like the popular group. And I had friends who were just normal everyday kids. I had friends, many who I was pretty close to, from the group that people describe as the burnouts, you know, the troublemakers, the kids that wore leather and stuff like that. And then I had even some quote-unquote nerdy or brainy friends, too. And I remember I was curious about Dungeons & Dragons, but I had never played it. And some friends got me into it in high school. And I guess they were kind of the normal, borderline nerdy kids. And I remember I caught hell from the popular kids in a way. Like, they liked me, but when they heard me discussing Dungeons and Dragons with kids in class, and, you know, I would try to hide it, you know, keep my voice down, but they ended up hearing me, and there's just this look of disappointment, you know, just like shaking their heads, which I think is stupid, because I love role-playing games. And so for probably like a year or two, I played Dungeons and Dragons. This was back in the day of, you know, paper and pencil and physical books. And then a little after that, I think, like, they began releasing TSR D&D games for the computer, like Curse of the Azure Bonds and stuff like that. And I think at a relatively young age, maybe my late teens or something, I just I stopped playing video games. I stopped playing role-playing games because I just told myself, you know, I've always been hard on myself. You know, I've had this weird hang-up about age, like I should be doing certain things at a certain age, and I'm too old for this or whatever. So I just gave up on video games and role-playing games. And then I remember probably around my late 20s, all of a sudden I started to get this weird sense of nostalgia for old games like Pac-Man and Sega Genesis games and stuff like that. And so I started to find some like emulators online and stuff like that, and playing really simple old games. And then before you know it, I had bought like a GameCube, and then I bought in, you know, an Xbox 360. And so for years now, I've been addicted to like survival horror games like Resident Evil and Silent Hill and stuff like that. Then recently, probably over the last year or two, I started playing role-playing games, role-playing video games. And I, even though they've been out for a long time, I recently discovered Baldur's Gate and then Neverwinter, which are D&D computer games. And then recently, I just discovered DDO. I guess that sounds cooler than Dungeons & Dragons Online. And now I'm addicted to that. So now, like, it's a free-to-play MMO, but they sucker you in where you purchase these things called Turbine Points with real money. and you quickly spend them, you know, within like the blink of an eye. And then like a crack addict, you're like, need more turbine points. And I'm like, what am I doing? So now I'm addicted to D&D probably more than ever. I kind of dug it as like a pastime type of thing for a year or two, like I said, back in high school. But now the online version is like crack. So I have this female dark elf character, and I have to find like an hour a day or something where I just immerse myself into this other world and blow off steam. That was my nerdy confession for the day. But anyway, I guess before I went on this long meandering diatribe, I think my point was, why would you kill yourself if your character in a role-playing game died? If it's a computer game, just generate a new character. If it's pen and papers, roll some dice. There you go, a new character. So I still to this day don't know if that story was apocryphal or not, but I remember a story about some college kid's character dying and then he killed himself. I'm like, dude, you can make another character. But anyway, we've gotten far removed from the topic of religion and atheism, and we've descended deep into the depths of nerddom. So before we go any further, I'll call this show a wrap, and this has, as always, been the Weekend Out, and thank you for listening. All right, and you know the deal. You can like the Facebook page, you can watch the videos on YouTube, and you can subscribe or rate the show through iTunes and Podbean. All right,